His reader.
We've got him for like 5 days. We may not need him. I built him for a day or two. He let him go. We have room in the committee, so.
Good afternoon. It's 1 p.m. Today is Wednesday, February 23rd, 2005, and we're going to open the subcommittee on transportation and economic development. Today we're going to begin an informational meeting on Senate Bill 5508.
That should say
public hearing.
Public hearing. I apologize.
On Economic and Community Development Department. Oh, I didn't realize our budget was up today. With us is our very talented LFO staff member, Robin Lamont, and Kat Bell, our administrative assistant. I believe the department is with us for 5 days, and during that time, we're hoping that we can work through the department, have lots of good questions asked, have good dialogue, and remember that we're all in this together, and we're all working in one direction towards developing the economy of the state of Oregon. And so with that, welcome, Director Brantley.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for having us here. We're looking forward to kind of chatting with you a little bit about where we have been in the last couple of years and where we hope to go to. If I could, Mr. Chairman, just make a couple of comments about that and put it into context before we kind of dig into things a little bit. But the governor has made it very clear over the last couple of years that economic development is critically important for the state. And I just want to say right off the top that he has been very true to that and has been tremendously supportive of that whole economic development side, both from a scheduling point of view as well as from a priority point of view, as have a number of different other people and offices as we've gone through this. Our budget, I believe, is both a short-term investment and a long-term investment. Short-term in order to generate the short-term jobs that we feel that are out there and opportunistically, and a long-term to kind of set the stage for future growth well beyond might be a life cycle of the directors here and other places, too. We have witnessed a 3-year downtrend unemployment, as you might know. And we're now hit the bottom, and we're working our way back up again. In December of 2002, our unemployment rate was about 7.6%. In December of 2004, our unemployment rate was about 6.8%. So for 3 years, we had been falling. We bottomed out a little bit. And, in fact, we're coming back really quite strong. Our growth rate in jobs right now is about 3 times our population growth. Our population is growing about 0.8% per year, and our job growth, quite frankly, is growing about 2.4% per year. So good trend lines that are happening all the way along. Right now, we have in Oregon almost, not quite, but almost as many jobs as we've ever had in the state. We're just short of that a little bit. And so, again, I think that from an unemployment point of view, we're getting there. It's taking a little longer than any of us are comfortable with. From a job creation point of view, things are really going pretty well. At the beginning of the 2003-2005 year, I kind of said that our goal for the department was to try to create and or retain about 17,000 jobs. 17,000 jobs, if that could be directly attributable to the department, would be approximately 1% of the unemployment rate. So that was our goal, is to try to hit 17,000 jobs in the biennium. If we were able to do that, that would mean almost $1 billion in payroll per biennium, and it would mean about $50 million per biennium in personal income tax alone. That would be no property taxes, that would be no corporate taxes, that would be no multipliers. And so from a rather conservative point of view, as we go through our discussions here, Mr. Chairman, that's the standard by which we will try to judge jobs and the return on investment of that. We try to understate, if you will, because I think the story is a pretty good one. Now, what we also hope, and this hasn't quite borne fruition, is if we could contribute 1% to the employment rate and the national economy through a variety of things could contribute 2%, And if we were at about 8.2%, then we should be somewhere around 5.1%. Well, we're not there. And so the question is, and perhaps we can discuss that a little bit, about why have we been a little bit slower in getting back on track than some of the other states. But the fact is that the national economy has turned around for a lot of different reasons. The economy has improved. The low interest rates have been tremendously helpful. I think the income tax incentives on a national basis have been very helpful. And we'll come back to this, too. The weak dollar has had an interesting impact, both on, in my opinion, the economy, but also we're seeing it very much in Oregon right now, and on a positive side, particularly the manufacturing sector, who has their expenses tied to the euros and their revenues tied to the dollar, are getting beat up pretty hard. And so we're getting some pretty good action from people looking at manufacturing in Oregon in the United States. The strong decisions by the state has also been an important part in this last biennium. The private sector, new governor, the legislature all have agreed to an economic game plan a couple of years ago, which included, among other things, House Bill 2011. It would, bridges and roads were an important element of that. The governor's leadership, including the Industrial Lands Order of 2003, and the private sector, including the Oregon Business Summit, which was launched in 2002, all put together a number of plans that we needed to kind of address, and including that was the revitalization of OECDD. And I think, again, a lot of that has been accomplished, that both the business plan that that the Business Summit suggested, as well as the legislature and the governor's office, too. So success, if there is some success, and I believe there is not just ours. It is a combination of everybody working together, and I think we are beginning to make some progress. But again, we have more to go, too. So what is that role of OECDD, and what have we been doing over the last couple of years? Well, I think it was very clear that jobs was going to be the major factor that we were going to be entrusted to. And so the creation of jobs was extremely important for all sectors in all parts of the state. And that creation of jobs, I think, is occurring. In November of 2003, Oregon was 27th in job creation amongst all states. In November of 2004, we're ranked number 8. So, again, it jives with what the trends that I was talking about is the job creation side is far outpacing our population growth, and, in fact, it shows up as we compare it to other states, too. So, again, all of us combined are beginning to accomplish that mission. Our vision for the last biennium was also to improve our business climate in which we all work. And today, right now, our agency has 64 different companies looking to locate here from all over the country. If we're successful, if we should be successful with every one, which would total about 14,000 new or retained jobs. Now, we won't be successful with all 64, but we are pretty far down the way in negotiations with a lot of those, and so my hope is that we would at least be able to capture somewhere around 70% of those. And again, in 2002, if you compare where we were and how many companies, we had about 20 companies looking to locate here. In 2003, we had about 30. So what that means is that we have about double the number of companies that are knocking on our door right now than we did a year ago. Again, very healthy sign and keeping us pretty busy as it is.
Question? We have a question. Representative Richards.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Director Brantley, it seems that 70% of the 64 is a really great goal. Do we have a track record of 70% of the 30 in the last year and in the 24 the year before that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Richardson, I think yes. I think it's a little bit better than that. In my knowledge, we have lost about 3 or 4 companies in the last couple of years for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's a highly competitive business, as you know. Sometimes we didn't quite have enough on the table. And for other reasons, the consumer base that these companies were looking for were more oriented toward California, and so it made some sense for them to locate there rather than here. But the companies that I'm talking about right now, we're pretty far down the road in our conversations with them. And that's why I say there could be some slippage, but I'm feeling pretty good. I met with some at 9 o'clock this morning, matter of fact. And I'm feeling that we're making some very good progress. And we got some very good people working that, too.
Great.
So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Director, as we go through this, what I want to do is make sure we have good break points.
Okay.
And so that way you have an opportunity to present, and then if there's natural times to pause and to break, let us know.
Okay.
So that way then we can ask our questions. I do have a couple questions since we have a break here. Back on the declining economy, you talked about the weak dollar. What other factors would you say have caused our economy to struggle over the last 2 years?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's a great segue to my next little comment, so thank you. I think that's a great question as to why we are struggling a little bit more. In the book, I'll point out what I think is a really kind of an interesting chart, and perhaps I won't do it right now. Among the other things is that we rely more on manufacturing than any other state, well, actually second in any other state in the Union, and more on manufacturing than any other state in the West. And as you know, the manufacturing sector has been a little slow in coming back. Now, part of that manufacturing side of things is technology manufacturing, is chip manufacturing. And again, the visibility there has been slower, particularly on the manufacturing side, than any others. So that certainly is one factor.
This, quick question. Sure. What percentage of our economy is technology manufacturing?
Of the manufacturing sector, thank you. Do we have the books there?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
You each have, I'm sorry, for the record, my name is Lynn Beaton with the department, and if you each have your lovely book, we can direct you to the page that has that information.
Okay.
On page 4 of your book is a chart that outlines different sectors and presents the total gross state product by industry type. And it compares it from Oregon in 1990 to Oregon in 2001 against the United States in 2001. So for each of those sectors, you're able to see how we compare.
We thought that this, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to more specifically answer your question, too, because I think your question is of that bar that represents 25.5%, how much of that was tech? Is that
right?
Okay.
That's correct, yeah.
But I thought this graph was, people ask us what's unique about Oregon all the time, what's unique about the Oregon economy. I think it jumps out really strongly right there that the manufacturing sector is so very different than the United States and how that has grown. A lot of that growth, again, has been in the high-tech sector. I forget the exact amount, but I believe it's somewhere in the 25 to 30% range of total manufacturing. We do have some significant manufacturing in everything from steel to RVs around the state and others, but clearly the acceleration, in my opinion, has been because of the high-tech manufacturing side.
Okay. Thank you. So we've got weak dollar, over-reliance on manufacturing.
There's one other factor, a couple of other factors that might be of interest in the discussion here. And as somebody from our department had pointed out, as they looked at the growth of industries nationwide, Homeland Security and Defense have been grown in every other state in the west of the Mississippi except in Oregon. And that's an interesting observation, I think, because we have not been known for our defense industry or our homeland security. And obviously other western states have been. And so I think that that's an interesting observation also to kind of digest as we look to see the composite strengths and weaknesses of our economy and of our state. Those are perhaps three reasons why it has been a little bit harder for us. There perhaps is a fourth reason, and this is a good reason as far as I'm concerned, and that has been the population growth of the state. And so the population growth has held up the unemployment rate to some degree. If you look at the job creation side of things, you know, that tends to support that argument that we're creating more jobs, but the unemployment rate seems to be a little slow in coming down also. So, again, those are perhaps four observations that may be the reasons of the improving economy hasn't responded on the unemployment side as quickly as we would have liked it to.
What do you think about in the more sparser parts of the state? What would be the reason for the decline there?
The decline in employment?
In, or the high unemployment rates.
Yeah. I think that, and I'm not an expert on this at all. So, but my sense is that the rural communities sometimes get hit particularly hard. Obviously, the agricultural base is important to them. Again, I'm not the expert on the on the agricultural side, but I know that the manufacturing is occasionally important to them, but there tend to be smaller businesses, and how we support those smaller businesses, I think, is a real question mark too. So the composition, I think, in eastern Oregon or in rural Oregon is different than other parts of the state too.
I'm going to flip gears on us because we are at that breaking point. What would you attribute to the recent increase then in jobs? You mentioned earlier that we have seen an increase. Why do you think that's occurred?
I think that there are two major factors right now, and there's more than that, I'm sure. Number one is as much as we kick the state about, you know, how terrible it is or how bad it might be to do business here, when you look at other states, we have a lot going for us. And we forget to take a step back sometimes and look at that. We consistently are competing against California, Washington, and to some degree Idaho, Nevada, and Arizona. Arizona and Nevada are less competitive. Usually that's a different kind of business that we're competing against. But for these other states, we consistently hear how difficult it is to do business in California. And we consistently hear also in Washington, not necessarily how difficult it is, but the transportation aspects of it, I think, are really quite serious in Washington, too. Those are all real big advantages for us, and that's why I believe that the state is very active. I will tell you honestly, Mr. Chairman, also, that somebody from Economic Development Commission chairman came down about 2 months ago and wanted to chat with us and said, "What are you guys doing?" And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because, you know, you guys are getting a lot of our business right now." And so I think the perception is that all of us are working together. All of us 2 years ago recognized that we really kind of needed to roll up our sleeves. And as much as we sometimes don't think we're working together, and we can certainly do a better job, I think that we are doing an okay job that way too.
I'm not going to try and get too particular, but help me here, because I'm still struggling with the concept. We have a lot going for us. Particulars. What do we as a state, what has led us to increase our jobs?
Normally when businesses come and knock on our door, I call it there's two sides of the ledger, and I usually try to talk about, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, the left-hand side of the ledger, and that's what I would consider operating costs. And those operating costs oftentimes are cost of land, cost of labor, cost of power, the ability to, and taxes, and those types of things that go in a normal operation of a business, I think that will fall to the bottom line. The right-hand side of that ledger, I consider the livability equation, and that, too, is quite important to businesses. A number of businesses say that they don't want to locate in a particular area anymore because their people are having to drive 100 miles or 75 miles in order to afford housing or schools or recreation. And again, for a lot of companies, that is a very, very important situation. Our own department, as you know, is called the Economic and Community Development, and that community development side I don't want to downplay, because it is very important aspect of our department. But right now, we're putting the throttle pretty hard on the jobs equation, too.
Let me play that question just a little further. If we've got two sides of the ledger that are helping us increase jobs, the preferential cost of land, power, taxes, and then also livability of the environment, how come we're not able to create jobs in eastern Oregon, where we have very inexpensive land, very competitive power, perhaps lower taxes, and some of us would contend a very high quality of livability?
I think that one of the things I left out, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, is where our customers are. And that is that's a very, very important equation, too. We are getting a lot of knocks on the doors, if you will, in southern Oregon in the Medford area. And a part of that is the fact that it is accessible to Northern California. I can't tell you the number of companies that I've kind of chatted with a little bit that have suggested that 75% of their sales are from 25 miles and around the Sacramento area. But they can't operate in the Sacramento area anymore, and so they're looking for other places to, if you will, manufacture their goods and services. The same thing can be true with a lot of companies. I mean, Freightliner's consumer base is not Oregon. Intel's consumer base is not Oregon. So you ask themselves, well, why are they located here? Well, the fact is they want to be located here, and we've given them some incentives in order to be located here. They're not located in eastern Oregon, I think, because of A, it's just two more steps away from their consumer base, and it's hard on a transportation side to get their goods and services to market.
Thank you. Question, and then what I'm going to remind the committee is we're going to find natural breaking points, and Director Brantley has agreed to pause at those points, and then we'll ask questions, and then we'll continue. And now is one of those breaking points. Senator Johnson.
With the chair's indulgence, I'd like to just go with a little bit of specificity. You use the phrase knocks on the door. Where do they knock? What happens? Who welcomes them in? Is it by phone? Where do they show up? How does the department deal with it? How do you know we're being responsive and timely? Describe the processing of a knock on the door.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, it is all of the above. What oftentimes occurs is a site consultant, and I don't know if this is the majority of the time, but many of these companies are very professional companies. They have outlets, and this is primarily on larger companies, but this is oftentimes the case. A site consultant is engaged by a company, and they are very knowledgeable about all the incentives and all the advantages of different states. That's their job, and they are very up to date on that. And so they oftentimes will phone our department, and that is the initial knock on the door, if you will. And they knock on the door of a lot of other states and say, Molly Olioxen, come on in and find out. And we start going through the sifting process for those individual companies as to what they need and what they want. It might be water, or maybe water's not so important. It might be labor force, or maybe that's not as important. It just depends on the individual company. But we sit down with them, as do other states, and we go through that. And we understand who their company is and where they are. There are some times then that I will jump on a plane and go back and talk to these companies. Other times they come out and do site visits and walk around, and that is oftentimes the second, if you will, or third step in this, if you make the cut list. Well, then they'll come down and they'll walk around and oftentimes engage in the local community at that particular point. Oftentimes we sign confidentiality agreements, and so sometimes it is said that we don't publicize our efforts enough. And that's probably very true. But it is also true that we sign confidentiality agreements, and deals are lost if that word gets out. And so we can't go too far out. At that particular point, if we make the cut list and we get the permission for us to engage in a conversation, we then talk to the local people and the local communities. Might be three or four. We'll try to offer up as many as we possibly can. In one instance, and probably most the best example that I can think of right now, is we offered up, they told us that they wanted something within a certain distance. We suggested that they ought to look more than that. They cut us off right there and said, we're not even interested in the five that we suggest. We've done our due diligence. These three are the ones we're most interested in. And so at that point we say, okay, fine, and then we'll try to hone that down.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Since you've been director, Mr. Brantley, could you provide for us tomorrow 15 examples of just exactly what you described to us where it worked and 15 where it didn't, and explain why? I mean, you just gave us one that didn't because they didn't want to go out beyond. But what I'd like to know is, in the scenario that you just described, the knock on the door comes, this whole pattern and process unfolds. I'd like to know the names of some companies that located here.
I'd be happy to. We have a whole slew of them that process has taken place. I don't know if I can give you 15 companies that haven't located here, because as I was talking about before, our track record has been pretty good in closing. We've lost some, but I don't know that I can give you 15 that we've lost.
One other follow-up, Mr. Chair. I understand when they when a company would come in and say we need proximity to rail, or we need water, or we need XYZ airshed. How many companies come to us and say, what's your incentive package? What are you going to do to buy us?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, almost all of them ask for some kind of incentive package. Almost all of them. And I don't know if they quite phrase it about buying us, but
well, maybe that was a little crude, but I was trying to make a point. I lived through the Nucor wars, and so I'm afraid that's the filter through which I see it.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Johnson, we have a variety of tools in order to apply. Some it depends on the business. Again, some of them are applicable to a business, and some of them really aren't. And so it is really kind of up to us to kind of say, okay, this one works and this one doesn't work. But we've got some pretty good tools. We're lacking a few of them also, but I don't discourage the number of tools that we have. We have some good ones.
One more, Mr. Chair, and then I'll be done. With the Chair's indulgence, then what I'd like for the 15 companies that actually settled here, if you could tell us the portal through which they entered. Did they come through your department? Did they come through the Brand Oregon advertising? Did they come through some local government door? So I want the portal. I'd like to know the process. You flew back to New York and talked to the CEO or whatever happened. I'm obviously making this up. Then I'd like to know, for those successful 15 recruitments, what tools you used in your toolbox. What of your funds did you turn to? What of your access to the strategic reserve did you turn to?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I was going to talk about that a little bit later, and so perhaps it's appropriate that I just use one example right now, and then we'll follow up if it pleases the chairman of those 15.
Can we take 3 minutes and then we can expand on the conversation in the future?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
It's just up to you.
Okay.
This is an actual example of a company that the deal is not closed yet. But it's coming along, so I won't use the actual company. But we used special public works funding to help building the necessary community infrastructure. Regional rural funding helped the communities that can't afford the incentives on a local package that was necessary. We asked ODOT to help a little bit on their immediate opportunity funds, not a little bit, they helped a lot, to build roads for needing the industry. And these tools combined helped us to prepare the land, if you will, and to get it certified. This piece of land had been sitting for 17 years for sale. After we certified it, in 6 months' time, it had been sold. Now we're using SRF money, which is Strategic Reserve Fund money, to close the deal in order to get that particular company on that particular piece of land.
Let's take another question, and then we're going to move on.
Thanks. I am really confused now. Piece of property languished for 17 years, owned by somebody, a corporation, a private individual. Mm-hmm. The state came in and put X amount of money into it, and then it sold.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, what happened is that piece of property was for sale. It had barriers for sale because of, let's say that there was some wetlands on that piece of land or other things, and that had not been mitigated. And as a consequence, that piece of land had sat there, even though it was shown to be for sale. What the state did is come in and do an entire analysis of that piece of land, including the mitigation of the wetlands. And so once that mitigation process was completed and the land was certified, at that particular point, a lot of barriers were cleared up, so that company said, okay, I understand now that I can probably proceed and close on this land in a short period of time. If I didn't have this certified piece of land before with all of the investment, it probably would have taken them 2 years and they wouldn't have been interested.
The point I'm trying to get to is, where did the enhanced value go? I've got a non-performing asset that sits there for 17 years. The state suddenly decides that it's going to come in and put all this public money into it. I mean, I'd like to invite your agency out to see all the tracts of land that I've got in my district. And if you've got to fix our wetland problems and fix our road problems, I'm looking for some explanation why that piece of property, why that company. And rather than say the immediate opportunity funds, in the list of 15, I'd really like the specifics.
Why don't we do this and have you prepare those? And what we're going to do is, I think, move to page 2.
Right.
And move forward. Director, what I am going to ask is, as there's natural breaking points, if you could let us know when those are. And then I'm going to ask the committee if we'd hold our questions, write them down, and at those natural breaking points, we'll take 15, 20 minutes and go through questions.
Okay. Gotcha. Should we take a break? I'm sorry. Or continue?
Please continue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
What I was going to kind of chat a little bit about is that there have been a number of players who have helped accomplish and help get to where I believe that we have turned a corner and beginning to add to the job equation. And again, I think that part of the partners involved here have really been our department too. Some of the tools that we're going to talk about over the next little while, perhaps we've already talked about a couple of them, is a strategic reserve fund. And I want to highlight that one too, because quite frankly, that is one of the key funds that we make. 2 years ago, you all, the legislature, granted us approximately $10 million on a biennium basis for the strategic reserve fund. So far, we have spent about $6.7 million in state investment. That has generated $137 million of new payroll in 18 months. We have earmarked, by the way, all the rest of it. If those jobs, if those companies should come in, then we will have exhausted our funds. If one just takes a 5% income tax rate, state income tax rate, that and multiplies it times the payroll, that equates to $6.9 million in new state revenue. And that's with no property taxes, no corporate taxes, no multipliers. That's just what that means. That's a return on investment per year, 6.9 versus a 6.7 investment. And again, we hope to apply the same type of formula. Pretty conservative. I think 5% is a conservative way. And we actually went back and got the payrolls of this of these companies to add them up to try to find out to make sure that these statistics are correct. That's part of one of our tools is the SRF, and again, we will talk about that throughout the next few days. Industrial lands, we talked about that just real briefly. I think that the industrial lands process has been an important one for us to go forward with. We hope by the end of June that we will have 45 certified sites. Those certified sites came from a private sector who was directed by House Bill 2011 to ask for that independent evaluation, which we did. We took it one step further and got a second third-party opinion in terms of the commercial viability of that, because we didn't want to invest in land that was not going to be commercially viable. And so we currently have, or will have, we believe, about 45 industrial sites that are commercially viable and that we can turn into jobs and companies too. Regional rural is part of our effort also. Right now, about $7.1 million of state investment has been created and retained into about 1,700 jobs, and that too equates on that same formula about $2.5 million of new state revenue with no multipliers at all. And that is one area, Mr. Chairman, that the governor's budget advocates an increase. All the other ones that I've talked about so far does not advocate any increase in budget. That is one area that we are suggesting that go up. Other aspects, I'll cut this a little bit short because I think that I'm running along a little bit, but we do have some challenges in the industrial land side of things as we go forward here, because I think that it's time to take a deep breath and say, okay, we have certified or will certify 45 pieces of land. Where do we go next? Do we go for smaller industrial land pieces, such as a 15 to 25 acre? Do we continue the development, if you will, of the Mill Creeks and the Juniper Ridges and the Spring Waters, which might take a considerable amount of money? All these things are questions for the future, but I think that there's no question that the industrial lands effort is working very, very well. We invest in infrastructure, international trade, continuing to streamline. The Arts Commission, Film and Video, a very important part of that right-hand side of the ledger, if you will. I've talked about the job side of equation, but I'm not sure that the film and video and the arts really kind of fit into that question and that picture, because to evaluate them on how many jobs that they create, I think, is probably not the evaluation process. I think it does fall into the right-hand side of that ledger that I talked about, and that's the feeling of community. How wealthy, how good, how deep is our community? And I think the film and video and art side of that really fall into that picture. I've also included in my comments about the ports, because we are involved in ports too. There's 24 of them, and we do have investments in the ports, including the hiring, if you will, of a lobbyist in Washington that advocates for the ports for Oregon, and I think has some pretty good successes too. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, I would be neglectful if I didn't talk about the importance of small business involved in the state, because OECDD helps the small business in many, many programs that we do. One can talk about small business in a lot of different ways. In my opinion, there are two ways that one can approach it. One is the top down, and that is if you invest in some larger companies, those smaller companies also benefit. For example, Intel, which is, you know, just announced a discussion regarding a SIP, Intel has approximately 4,200 subcontractors, many of them small businesses. Freightliner, as I understand it, has over 2,000 subcontractors, many of them small businesses. So that's a top-down side of things, but again, I think it's important that we continue to invest on the bottom-up side to make sure that those small businesses are healthy also. So I'll stop right here and say that, you know, our focus has been on jobs and job creation, but it also has been on the business environment, if you will, in a larger sense. We have a lot of tools, and it's a complicated department, one in which we pay a lot of attention right now to the economic health, but the community side of it, including arts and film and video, are also important too. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Avakian.
Thank you. Could you talk just a little bit about the what efforts you have in coordinating state efforts with cities and counties? And you brought up the Intel, which is a great example where you've got a local Washington County incentive in order to keep them there. But also comes to mind things like the battle between Multnomah and Washington County for businesses, with big businesses like Columbia Sportswear leaving and switching. Do you have any involvement in those types of efforts between the counties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Akavian, the answer is yeah. I had breakfast with the PDC yesterday morning to find out what projects that they have going on. We're working jointly right now with KinderCare, for example, on there. More likely than not, it is joint efforts that we combine to get together. It usually is a local and statewide effort in order to get businesses in order to put a financial package together. And that's why, quite frankly, the regional rural money is important, because oftentimes those regional rural people are able to contribute, we're able to contribute and put something together. The battle between Washington County and Multnomah County is something that puts us right in the middle of a difficult situation. And usually, you know, you don't like to be there. That's not, I don't believe, what we're supposed to do. And so I think what we try to do is sit down with the companies and the different parties, perhaps Washington or perhaps Multnomah County, and make presentations to the individual company and allow them to decide what they really want and make that fair evaluation. Again, I think we get into trouble when we try to side with one county, one city, or another. There are a number of examples, for example, going on right now, that somebody has come to our office, came to me 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, and said, we had a very good experience of expanding about 4 years ago. But we made a mistake a little bit, is that we asked for 44 different communities. And we're overwhelmed by the response. We now want to do this again, but we want to cut it down into about four or five communities. And so we said, fine. And they knew kind of what communities they wanted to go into, and so that process is now taking place. So oftentimes we try to let the individual company, if you will, decide what they want to do. Does that answer your question, sir?
I think so.
Okay.
Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the department and some of the work that I have had with the department where it has involved infrastructure. And to me, that might be the purpose of the department. Job creation, for me, has been a real challenge to understand it. To begin with, I'm not convinced government needs to be in the job because private investment is the engine that runs it and actually creates the jobs. And if we're going to do it, it seems like we would have had a better plan. And actually, you weren't there, so it kind of gets you off the hook. Because we've had the plans for a number of years now. I'm reminded of the comic strip with the little king, you know, the little guy. And they come in and say to him, sire, the starving peasants are here to see you. And he says, tell them to come back after lunch. That's a little bit the way we have felt with these high unemployment areas where we have been desperate to try to get jobs to come in. And we've expanded businesses. We've created a regional medical center in Coos Bay. We've done a number of things that have kept the engine going. We have all the marts, the Bi-Mart, the K-Mart, the Walmart. So people come there to shop. But to try to replace any kind of manufacturing jobs, Brand Oregon has been a bright spot because of our seafood. But it's been slow in coming. So my question to you is, should we stop and reevaluate at this point what we really need to focus on as an economic and development department and limit ourselves to that and not have the complexity of trying to be all things to all people, which is a lot of what you have tried to do and tap dance fast in trying to do it. And where I have seen some of the best work done is where people from your department have come in and helped in the organizing of things, whether it was in ERT or whether it was in Oregon Solutions or in Community Solutions. Those venues have worked well. Where we have tried to bring people in, I think we at least deserve a C-minus or D grade. So I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berger, thank you. I too believe that what we as a department and as a state, all of us, not just our department, but all of our departments, is to set the table so the private sector can grow. I think that we run into trouble when we try to define what exact company or what in exact industry we want to make happen, and it doesn't happen for a variety of reasons. And so I think I agree with you on the infrastructure side, and I think that the North Spit is a good example of what we're beginning to do and getting some traction, I think, with the stud mill there and perhaps some other things on the North Spit. But it does take, and that is good, I believe, for setting the table. But when those companies do come here and knock on our door and say, we really like now what you have done with the infrastructure, now close us. Then we do need those other factors, if you will, in order to close those companies. And by closing them, I mean forgivable loans or other types of things. That's the game that is being played all over the world right now. And you need those types of things in order to do that. Now, I think you have to have a great deal of discipline because you're spending state money. And I think that there is a discipline that we use that I'm quite frankly proud of. And I think you saw that in the Strategic Reserve Fund when we spend 6.7 and we get 6.9 back in the first year. That's a pretty good return on investment as far as I'm concerned. There are some examples, and probably the best things are some of the things that we haven't done, that we said, you know, that doesn't make sense. That's not us. It's going to cost way too much. And so we've kind of not walked away from it, but I don't think that that's the best return on investment. So, but I agree with you. I think that we set the table right. And so we have an infrastructure in place. And when companies then come, rather than us going out and recruiting them, when companies do come, we have something ready to go for them and are ready to close them at that particular point.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Let me say a couple of things. When you try to do so many things, some things that would be very helpful don't get done. For instance, you just helped us with the rail spur. Mm-hmm. That's going to make a tremendous difference. We have Walport, and all they need is a little sewer line to some industrial property. And it's taken, I've been working on it a year and a half. There's still not a sewer line to Walport. It's not going to cost much money. But everybody is tap dancing over in different directions, and that doesn't get done. Then we had a gentleman who was in a successful business, wanted to expand a business to Coos Bay. Some of your people were there. I was there. We all got in the room. We all talked. The property in question had been a mill. He wanted to put another mill. It was the exact same use of the property. The only difference would be that instead of 250 people running day and night, 24 hours, there'd probably be 50. That we're going to run it because it'd be a computer mill. The first thing out of the chute was, well, you know, you'd have to have a traffic study. Hello, a traffic study. It's still in the same road. It's one-third the number of people, or less, one-fourth, the number of people that are going to be working there. Then we start with the EIS. And then the laundry list starts. And this man who has the capacity for a $50 million investment is sitting there. Now, I'm in business. I can take one look at his face, and I know exactly what he's going to do. He says, you know, I'm going to think about this. You bet he was going to think about it. He didn't come. The property is now sold. It's off the tax rolls. That's okay. They could buy it. But I think somehow we're not very smart. And if we're going to spend the kind of money we spend in economic development, we need to be a lot smarter than that. So wasn't your department that threw the monkey wrench in, but I'm just telling you, this is a replay of what we see. And when people are going to invest their money and hang out a shingle and be responsible for our payroll, and Mr. Brantley, you know what this is. A lot of people don't understand that takes a lot of sincere interest in what is going to come back if you are going to be sustainable. We talk about sustainability and everything. If my business is going to be sustainable, we have got to be able to make payroll, have customers come in, and continue. And we've had that for 35 years. We have created family wage jobs for every year that we have been there. We have no minimum wage people. But we were just an investor that did not take government to put us there. We came there, but it did take some smart community people who were willing to help us get into the business. So I don't know. I'm to the point now that I have very serious doubts about the processes that we're using and how successful we are if you remove the kind of infrastructure I've been talking about away from the equation.
Well, let's do this committee. I think part of the purpose of round one is for the department to explain to us how their process works and to help show us how those tools are all going to work. And then in round two will be our time as a committee to help figure out if their objectives line up with what ours as a committee line up with. Really quick, Director, as you get to the strategic reserve detail, can you share with the committee the smallest company that was served, and then also share with us perhaps a breakdown of how that $10 million was dispersed out?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm more comfortable if I could show you the disbursement of the 6.7 million, because a lot of the companies that I'm talking about in the 64, that money hasn't been dispersed, and there's some confidentiality issues. But the money that I have talked about has been dispersed, and that's public record, so I'd be happy to do that.
And I appreciate that. Yep. The other thing is I appreciate the ratio analysis on return on investment as a lender. I appreciate that. As you're looking at that strategic reserve and looking at the job created with this investment, can you do a little ratio analysis and tell me what that means in those communities? So, for example, in the community of Portland, 100 jobs means 0.0000% of something, perhaps. But in Bandon, 25 jobs means what?
Right.
And if you could just kind of break down what those investments mean,
sure,
in terms of impact to the community. And then on the industrial land, when you get to that, 45 commercial viable locations, can you talk about how those locations were determined? Talk about the qualifications for certification. And then I'd really be interested in knowing how many ports have become certified or will be certified as part of that 45.
Sure.
We could.
We'd be happy to, and that is included in our books, and so it might be out of order as we go through the tabs, but hopefully many of those questions will be answered for you.
Perfect. Okay. Why don't we move to the next step?
Natural break here?
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
And since we had some folks that were out, why don't you remind us where you are in the book?
Okay.
And then go ahead and proceed.
All right. Thank you. If everybody has their book, we've kind of chatted a little bit about the state of the economy, and there are some pages that might be of interest to you. So I'm just going to flip over, because on page 4, for example, I've already touched base a little bit on that chart, which I thought was an interesting chart and really shows the manufacturing component for Oregon itself. We talked about some of the economic forces on page 5 on the economic outlook, and again, I'm going to just kind of pass over some of those things, including the unemployment rates we talked about also, unless there's questions all the way through. If I could start on page 13, which is the agency overview, because again, we have kind of discussed a little bit of the general. I indicated that the agency's goal for the last couple of years has been to create jobs and to create a better business environment. And that indeed has been something that we have tried to concentrate on very hard. The second goal, I would say, is the accountability side. Because amongst all of us, we want to come back to you and say your money has been well spent, and in fact it has created jobs, and that's what we are trying to do. And we want to have some hard and fast data and return on investment for you all also. So we have restructured our department in order to accomplish that, and I will ask Ann Beaton if she wants to take us through some of that on page 13.
Thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Lynn Beaton, and I'm the manager of the Central Operations Division for the department. I've been with the agency for 9 years and in a different position until about a year ago, so it's been interesting to watch the transition. What we have been trying to do over the last biennium is, as Marty has explained, redirect our focus so that we're really focusing more specifically on the job creation issue. However, as Senator Verger noted, we've also got the community piece. And so for us, I see us always being in a somewhat interesting position that you've got to help businesses directly and provide direct assistance to encourage them to come, to expand and locate, but we also need to work with the communities so that they've got the infrastructure and the tools and the trained people to be able to assist in getting that business there. So we're often in an interesting position where, when the economy's really good, we're told focus more on the community, so we kind of shift back to that part of the equation, and then when the economy's not doing as well, we kind of try to shift back more to job creation. So I think you're right, your comment about are we trying to do too much. To be honest with you, there's some of us in the agency who've been wondering that for a while. And we took a hit of almost a third of our staff over the last 4 years, and it does make you stop and think, all right, can we really be taking on everything that we're looking at right now, and what's really the best place for us to be focusing? What we're trying to do right now, sorry, question?
No. I got the evil eye.
No, Senator Johnson, I'll take your question.
Have you memorialized any of those internal discussions?
Interesting question. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, to some extent we've outlined the issues, and they change. I mean, we're always working on new work plans, and in doing that we'll identify what the problems are that we see and try to identify those.
Through the professional staff, could you provide the committee with a copy of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we definitely could provide you with copies of the work plans. I'm not sure you really want them, but you might want summaries. Would you like us to try to go through and just sort of explain the changes through the years and the issues that we've
seen? Summaries would be lovely. What I'm looking for is the internal musings of the agency saying, what should we or could we be doing differently or not doing or better?
Mm-hmm.
And you've just indicated that those discussions have gone on internally, and I'm just asking if there's a work product, and if there is, would you make it available?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we will certainly make available to you the information that we talked about in discussions as we've looked at different work plans. I'll tell you that where we are right now, given statutory direction and the direction that we got from last session, is we are trying to focus very specifically on two things. We're trying to help businesses expand and locate. And we're doing that with technical assistance, what Senator Verger talked about. Sometimes the most helpful thing that we can do is come into a community and explain the process and help a community get through the permitting process. And the site that Marty was referring to a while ago, that was the problem. In terms of trying to get a company to come on site, I personally, as our regulatory advisor for years, was on that site 4 times with different companies. But the community said, we've got a lovely flat site. It's ready to go. It's close to roads. We want to build. Well, they didn't realize it had a lot of wetlands on it. And so companies would come and visit and say, until you've got that dealt with, we're walking away. And it wasn't until the agencies came in and said, let's get the money to help you map the wetlands. Let's walk through the process. Let's get the Corps of Engineers on the site. Let's help coordinate that for you. And that's what it really took to get that site ready to go. So one of the main things that we provide is that kind of technical assistance, both to individual companies as well as to communities.
Well, I would appreciate getting a full copy, and if you could get Senator Johnson a full copy, and perhaps anyone on the Senate who would like a copy of that can work with Senator Johnson, and anyone on the House, I can get them.
I would certainly like to see it, but could I clarify part of that request, Mr. Chair?
Of course.
Or ask for a clarification. Because you've mentioned two things, a summary of what you did and then these work plans or notes or whatever you have. And if you want to do a summary, I think that's fine. You can do that. But I would be most interested in the work plans as they were when you did them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, unfortunately for me and my staff, I keep all that stuff, so I've got them. We can supply
that. Thank you.
So working directly with businesses is one key part of what we're doing. The other thing that we're doing is working with the communities to help them get capacity and to help them build the infrastructure. And, in fact, that's still the primary thing that our funding goes to. Almost 80% of our funds actually go to infrastructure projects. So although it's the businesses that make the news and that can bring in a lot of jobs sort of in one fell swoop with one company, it's really trying to help get that infrastructure in place, which is one of the main things financially that we're working on. So that's kind of the overview, is that we are still trying to do both the business piece and the community piece, but frankly, each session, when we get slightly different direction from the legislature, will sometimes go to one as more of a priority than the other. And so I kind of see it as a pendulum as we continue to work to move forward. And the question is, do we want to continue to try to do all those things? And I think that's an interesting one to discuss. In talking about individual programs, let's look at the book.
Well, I think that's a good breaking point if we have any questions of the committee. No? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned participating in the costs of essentially dealing with wetlands and presumably environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
Sellers of property typically will participate in that, and I guess my question is, why would the state need to be subsidizing the seller in in selling that property.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, the properties that we are willing to focus on for the state are those that we think are really prime industrial sites, that if they were really ready to go, would attract business. And often those are the sites that are on the transportation corridors and are nice flat sites with communities that really want that kind of business. The reason for working on that one specifically was because it was one of those sites. And the landowner really didn't, I think, understand exactly what the process was. So even though he paid for much of the work on the site, what we really provided was expertise to sit down, explain all the different permits to him, and then bring in all the players that he needed to work with. Because he didn't really know where to start. And because there are so many regulations and so many different programs, we hear that a lot. And businesses or landowners say, well, who do I call first? How do I do this? And that's some service that we can provide.
Thank you.
Senator, or did you have a follow-up, Senator? Senator Johnson.
Has that site now had a business located on it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, it's got a business right now that's finalizing the deal of purchase.
Good. Then I would presume that all this information is now in the public domain, or will be shortly.
Will be shortly is true.
Give me a time window. How long do you think?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, it can be difficult to tell. The company has worked with the local government now to look at the land use issues and try to resolve those. And as I understand it, in getting an update earlier this week, there's still one land use issue or permit that they're trying to get resolved. And that could take a few weeks. That's what I've been told.
Good. Well, Mr. Chair, if it's only a few weeks, then as soon as that information comes into the public domain, could you make that a detailed case study so that maybe the committee can understand how it is that that site came to your attention, how it is that the nod was given to go ahead and fix that one, how much money the property owner spent versus the public investment, how many jobs were created there. What I think might be really helpful is to get out of the sort of hypothetical partnering tools. I don't understand what those words mean, but I would understand a profile of that particular transaction.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, we can definitely do that. And I agree with you. I mean, the stories and understanding an example is what makes this real. It's very hard to talk in the hypothetical. The one piece that we wouldn't have right now would be actual jobs. We will have projected jobs. Because when we're working with companies, that's what they're giving us. They're saying, if we locate on this site, we expect to bring X number of jobs to the property. And so that's the one thing that would be a projection, but we can get you the rest.
One last thing.
I want to follow up, then I'll toss this over. As you're measuring those jobs, can you share with the committee how you're tracking and measuring those and who is getting the credit and why you've made those decisions on who gets the credits for the job, especially when you're using multiple tools within the department?
Mr. Chair, yes, we can do that. To answer the first part of the question just very briefly, how we measure jobs.
As we go through this, you can do that.
That will be fine.
I don't want to put you on the spot on that. Senator Johnson.
And I want to talk about one other tool in the toolbox, and that is these projected jobs. Mm-hmm. Are there abatements then of the costs to the property owner as the jobs are created, or how's that mechanism work? And if the jobs miss the mark dramatically, who closes the gap?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, for some of the money that we provide, particularly let's talk about Strategic Reserve Fund, because that's often the one that we use to sort of close the deal if we need money at the end. What we will do is provide a forgivable loan. A forgivable loan. So what the contract will say is, if you create 150 jobs within 2 years, you don't have to pay us back. If you don't, you do have to pay us back.
Guaranteed with what?
Guaranteed. Well, we will... Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, in putting together those contracts, we ask to get financial statements often from the company so that we know that there would be the money there to pay that back.
Forgive me for being so blunt. I've had the opportunity to borrow in very high figures from commercial lending institutions, and it is a painful, laborious process with personal guarantees and financial statements. Are these audited financial statements? Do you get personal guarantees? Do you get collateral signed over? What is it besides a financial statement? And I think recently in the newspapers, people, the public, whose money is being invested here, have had their confidence shaken in the production of financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your guarantees to make sure that the public's money is not unduly at risk? And if it is, and the projected jobs don't pan out the way they're supposed to, who's ultimately held accountable, and what is the mechanism for the state to be repaid for the investment that we made with no return on our side of the ledger?
Fair enough. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, when we draft the contracts, we do look at financial statements. I'll be honest, it's not going to be as detailed as what you're talking about with a commercial lender, but we are making sure that we know the company we're talking with, that we know who the parent company is, and that we know that they've got enough assets to be able to cover that loss if the jobs aren't created. The binding agreement is the contract itself. So if the company fails to meet the terms of the contract, we contact the Attorney General's office, and they take action to recover those funds against that parent company.
How do you, really quick, how do you ensure your position, your security position?
Mr. Chair, it really depends on which fund you're talking about, to be honest with.
Let's take strategic reserve.
I would actually like to do more research and get back to you. I mean, although I help draft the contracts, I'm not the one doing the financial review, and so I'd like to get that back to you if we can.
Mr. Chair, one other question that I think is terribly serious. You just said you help draft the contracts.
Mm-hmm.
What are your qualifications to be drafting legally binding documents on behalf of a state agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm an attorney.
Okay.
So that is my qualification. Also, what we do is all contracts are sent to the Attorney General's office if they're over a certain amount, as required by state law. If they're under a certain amount, what we have done is to develop templates over time for our different funds. So although I am a licensed attorney and licensed to practice for the state, we have made sure the Attorney General's office has signed off on all of those different templates so that we know that what we've got is legally sufficient by the Department of Justice.
I'm just curious, and I ask this as a rhetorical question because I don't know the answer. I was a state agency head for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I'm an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't able to initiate any of our own documents. I want to be clear, I'm not practicing, never did practice any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never able to generate our own documents. We always needed contracts generated by the AG's office.
Again, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, maybe I'm not being clear. The contracts that we're working for or with the templates have been approved by the Attorney General's office. Okay? And if they go over a certain amount, even though we're using a standard template, they still go back to the Attorney General's office for review again. If they're under a certain amount and we're using the language that's already approved by the AG's office, we're able to go forward with that. So the only reason that I am head of the contracts group is because I'm an attorney, and we do review those contracts internally, but we are reviewing them against the standards dictated by the AG's office. Does that help explain that?
We'll have time.
It does. I'm not going to belabor this. I'm familiar with a contract that was unenforceable due to its legal insufficiency, and this is an area I'd like to probe more deeply.
I'd like to go back to goal number one. I guess I need some more clarification on the definition of jobs. What type of jobs? Where? Are we taking cultural community issues into consideration? To me, create jobs seems very, very broad as a number one goal.
Interesting. Mr. Chair, what we do is when a company that we have helped fund creates X number of jobs, they have to send that information in their payroll to the employment department. And what we then do is verify with employment that there was payroll there for those jobs.
Who decides what type of jobs to target, though?
Mr. Chair, we're generally working with the local community to determine what type of industry or businesses you would want to bring into your local community. And so once we have decided that or worked with you to bring them in, if they're a job and it's a payroll and it's given to employment, we can count it.
Who determines whether or not the jobs are important to the community?
Mr. Chair, you do. The community hopefully will be the ones making that decision, although we do have business development officers around the state, 12 of them, as many of you know and have probably worked with, who can give you advice.
Do you keep track of requests for strategic reserve money that have been declined?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do.
I'd like to get a copy of that. if I may.
Okay, Mr. Chair, to make sure that I'm clear, do you mean declined in that they came, looked at a site, were interested in Strategic Reserve, but then either left or we just didn't fund them? You're talking about both?
I'm talking companies who have made a request for Strategic Reserve money but have been deemed not worthy of receiving Strategic Reserve money.
Mr. Chair, I will need to make sure that we're actually able to make that public. To be honest with you, that's the first time I've had that request. So we'll see what we can get to you on that.
Okay. And if it's not available, that's fine. Okay. I'd like to go to retain jobs. Is there public public information on the companies that we have helped retain?
Mr. Chair, yes. We keep the list of the companies, and again, what we will do is periodically go back to employment, and when we're retaining jobs, we start by finding out from employment what was the payroll at the time that we gave them money, and then we go back later and double-check and say, okay, were you actually able to retain those jobs during that period of time?
Can you provide the committee with a list of those companies that you have helped retain?
Yes, Mr. Chair, absolutely. We've got that for all of the funds.
I think that's an issue that I'll be focusing on over the next couple of days. I'm just struggling with the definition of jobs because I think everyone in this room would have a different idea on what is the ideal job, and I want to play through that a little bit.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say a couple of words on that. We do work very closely with a number of different local groups, including the Economic Development Associations, and as well as our BDOs, as well as the regional rural people. So there's a lot of local input that kind of comes into this in the decision-making process. And from my experience, anyway, in the last couple of years, if it's important to the local regional people, I can't think of a time when we haven't been able to do something in order to make it all happen. I mean, to try to figure out a fund or one way or the other in order to make it happen. Now, I could be mistaken on that, but I don't remember that, quite frankly.
The reason I struggle with this is I do think the legislature has placed a tremendous amount of initiatives on the agency over the last decade and a half, and I think we need to bring some clarity to this. Very simplistically, I think about the arcade in Rockaway, Oregon, and how important that was to me that stay open. And I'm curious if the community of Rockaway came to the Economic and Community Development Department and said, we want to keep the little place open, would the department view that as a priority, even though in the scope of the entire state, it's not. And that analogy could be played out in Ione, it could be played out in Moore, it could be played out in hundreds of little communities. And I'm trying to figure out how are we creating jobs and balancing that entire need around the state.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
well, I'm struggling with that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a few more questions, then we're going to proceed forward. I think Representative Abaki, and then we'll go to Senator Morris.
And it isn't as much the word jobs that I would struggle with as it is the word create. And maybe when we get to performance measures, you'll get into this a little more. But as you discuss what you do out there, I think it would be good to know what you do that helps get the business here that in your absence wouldn't have happened anyway. As an example, the purchasing of land that we were talking about earlier, you would think that in a free enterprise system, if there's an attractive piece of land and somebody wants a business, that the two people would get together, drop a contract, and it would be a done deal. And I don't know how to gauge your influence.
Mm-hmm.
In that happening. So maybe you can filter some of that explanation in as you continue to present.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marty, I know you and your staff, you know, you're tackling difficult issues, but it seems to me that there's a lot of irony in this whole situation. And reflecting on Senator Verger's experience, we have created hurdles that grow higher and higher and higher and make it more difficult for businesses to locate, to expand, to thrive in this community. And then we come around and we pour public funds into building ladders to get over these hurdles. What's wrong with this picture? What I would be very interested in, based on your experience, and you're in a lot of communities dealing with businesses, is what can we do to lower the barriers? Because I am totally convinced. I've been in business. I did not need government to give handouts for me to be successful. But what are the barriers, based on your experience, that we could eliminate or lower so you create the environment for the free enterprise system to work? To government to put themselves in a position of trying to predict where business is going to go and what their needs are, you almost have to get in the mind of the company and their strategic planning to do that, or you just happen to be lucky and you kind of got the lines intersected and we just happened to get the right property at the right time at the right place. So I would be very interested in what would you recommend that we change in this state to bring the barriers down so we don't have to go to such lengths to just help businesses be successful.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, I couldn't agree with you more, quite frankly. It is ironic, in my opinion, that we sometimes are kind of chasing our tail that way. Some of the examples that I oftentimes use is we have a gold standard for, let's say, sewage, a sewage treatment. And it's very expensive, and it's very expensive sometimes to small communities as well as to large communities. Is it necessary to have that same gold standard for everybody all the way along the line? I've chatted with the Association of Oregon Counties, for example, and saying, let's pursue this through EPA and other things to see if there isn't another way that we can lower the cost to local communities, for example, and still be within compliance. Those, I think, are the things that you're perhaps talking about in order to make the system work a little bit more.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Also, what I'm talking about is time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Time is one of the most critical factors in any business enterprise because you make your business plans, you make certain assumptions, and if you can't perfect those plans in a timely way, you're just literally blown out of the water with changes in the economy. Mm-hmm. And businesses are very adaptive to, requirements, but it's time. Mm-hmm. That's what kills enterprise and delays.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, that's what the certified process is all about. What it does is goes over those hurdles, and so you can go to a company and say, we think with reasonable assurance you can break ground within a six-month period of time. Without that certified land process, it could be 2 years or 3 years. So no company is going to take that. They're going to go another direction.
If you could help our committee in the next day or two, and I would like some thought put into it. What are those barriers that we as a state ought to be looking at that we could reduce or eliminate that would help spur the economy?
Mr. Chair, one instructive piece might be the certified sites.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a universe that you could start very easily with. How many of those certified sites had wetland problems? How many had access problems? How many had make it up, whatever you need? But what was it about those sites that needed government intervention to make them shovel ready?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we can definitely provide that. May I ask a question at this point? What would you like from us? Because we can go through some answers to these questions now. We can prepare better answers. We can keep babbling.
I think what I'd like to do is have you continue to move forward. The questions that are being presented, I think if you could respond back to us with a written response. That way committee members can read those. And then what we'll try and do over the next couple days is give a little bit of time for follow-up on those written responses. And I think that'll help expedite the process. So why don't we continue, and then hopefully we'll – why don't you folks continue for about another 20 minutes, and then we'll wrap up with questions for 20 minutes, and then maybe give the last couple minutes for the director to wrap it all up.
Why don't we go to innovation? Well, performance measures? Okay, why don't you try that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we're back. I think what we're going to do right now is give you a very brief overview of our performance measures, because we really are trying to make sure that we stay more streamlined and more focused and that we know how we're going to measure success. Page 19 of your book has a one-page overview of the 9 performance measures the department currently has. And just going through those briefly, numbers 1, not surprisingly, is number of jobs created. And you'll see the target for our current biennium, which is 11,050, as well as the actual, which is where we are right now, and the targets that we've got for the next biennium at this time. I'm just going to list these quickly unless you have questions and want to talk about the numbers specifically. I'll just describe these in summary.
Well, why don't we do this really quick? Committee, how would you like to proceed? Would you like to ask questions as we go through each one, or would you like to wait till we go through the whole list and then ask? What's most beneficial?
Wait.
Why don't we take one quick question, then we'll...
When you refer to jobs, are you referring to all jobs or just private sector jobs? And if public sector jobs are included, I just need to know numbers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, we're referring to the private jobs that we help create through our actions. So it's what the funding that we put in, how much of that funding do we think could be attributed to these jobs? That's how we're doing it.
Mr. Chair.
Well, why don't we go through all 9 of them, and then we'll write our questions down. And
okay. The first 2 are total jobs created and total jobs retained, and we will be getting information back to you to explain more clearly what we think a job is and how we measure that. The 3rd performance measures, new sales of assisted clients. This measure applies to our international division. And what that division really does is try to help Oregon companies find markets overseas and sell their products. So the way that we measure the success of that program is by measuring the sales of the clients that they helped. The 4th performance measures deals with certified industrial lands, which we've already talked about. And what we have done is developed a number of these sites that we deem project ready that can be certified for immediate development. And you'll see that the target we have for this biennium is 50 sites and 4,500 acres. Right now we have 22. Actually, right now we have 23. A new one just came online last week. So this being 1 week old is out of date. 23 sites. We do expect to have 45 to 50 by the end of the biennium, so we're hoping to make that target. The 5th performance measure, number of community capital projects assisted for construction. So this is dealing with our infrastructure dollars and just how many construction projects have we assisted. The 6th performance measure is number of the capital projects assisted for planning, because we're able to go into a community and actually help them plan for their infrastructure and do the studies they need to do up front before they start construction. This is the 1 performance measure that in looking at you're going to notice is lower than what we had predicted. Our target for this biennium for the planning projects is 90. Right now we're at 53. The reason for that is that we're working more on industrial land sites and dealing with those specifically. And so we're trying to move more of our dollars to industrial lands and getting ready for construction than some of the planning up front. The 7th performance measure, number of identified traded sector industry clusters with active sector plans. We'll talk in a little while about industry clusters. We'll describe to you how we're identifying those traded sector groups and how we're trying to assist those clusters. Right now, this one, to be honest, is a difficult one to measure. It's hard to measure what kind of impact you're really having in helping working with a traded sector cluster. So what we're going with is what are the number of these cluster groups that have developed a plan for their entire cluster, and which one of those groups did we work with? The 8th performance measure, number of patents per 10,000 Oregon businesses. We are learning that number of patents being set can really help describe how many new innovation companies you're working with, how many new ideas and new products are being spun off in your state. That, believe it or not, can be measured probably most effectively by how many patents have been applied for in Oregon. And the last performance measure is one that will probably be familiar because it's right now required of all state agencies, which is what is our overall customer survey score on a scale of 1 to 4. This one also you'll notice is a little under the target. We were shooting for a 3.5 on a 4-point scale. We got close. We hit 3.4 in terms of our customer feedback, but we are up from last year where we were 3.3. So to give you a very brief overview, those are the performance measures that we're trying to focus on. We have scaled down the number. Last biennium, we were working with 22. Frankly, it was spreading us even more thin than we are now, and we thought we've got to refocus and try to make sure that we're giving better attention to a few things and doing that well. We still have a question if we're covering too much, but at least this is more of a focus in terms of those performance measures. Questions?
Sandra Berger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you put out your first list of industrial sites that were shovel-ready, I was very disappointed to see that the IP property in Gardner was not one of the ones listed. And if there's anything in the world that's shovel-ready, it is. You know, it has its own substation. It's on the railroad. It's sitting on water. They've taken care of the wetland issues. So I called, and they said, well, the company is located in the east, and they weren't very interested in the listing. And I called again, and they said, well, that it was going to be listed. I don't know if it's listed until yet, but that's just one of the things that bothered me. The other thing that I wanted to comment on is that you have a real challenge that maybe you haven't mentioned, and that is the shadow that you have. You remember the little poem, Me and My Shadow Goes In and Out With Me. What's the good of him is more than I can see. You've got a shadow from Boise, Idaho, from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You've got people that are in competition with you all the time. You don't know their names and you don't see them, but they're the people that are talking to businesses as well as you. Mm-hmm. And so while I might want to say, I don't want you to subsidize, someone else will say, I don't like enterprise zones and all those things, and yet you've got the competition that you have to face. So I would really like to hear a response, however, on the Gardner site. If you don't know it, if you get that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, we can do that. I'm aware of the site, and I knew it was being worked on, but I will find out the current status and get back to you.
Mr. Chair, also, if I could touch base just a little bit on, because there seems to be a thread throughout our discussions here on industrial sites as to how we identified those sites in the first place. And again, I think it's important to understand that We didn't want to get into the business of identifying which is commercial and which is not. So we and you asked us to set up an independent study group, if you will, of professionals. And I appointed that group, and I believe there was approximately 9 people from around the state that were a part of that, including Jim Mark and Greg Speck and a number of other people, who then poured through a number of data and decided that which they thought was most commercially viable. And so then we started the sifting process, and there were 42 different criteria. And then we went to a third party, a commercial site professional, to verify that, and that's what that person also did. Again, we tried to find the most commercially viable spots of our database, if you will. That currently is on the internet right now, and it is under OregonProspector.com.
OregonProspector.com.
It is one of the I think innovative sites in the United States regarding that, because you can get a lot of information. I forget the number of hits, but I think we're getting somewhere around 500 hits a day on that site, and people tell us it's a very, very viable thing. So I think we're moving in the direction of trying to get outside consultants telling us rather than we trying to determine that.
On performance measure number 1 and 2 on jobs created and jobs retained, can you provide the committee with a spreadsheet talking about which programs within the department are receiving credit or get the credit for the created jobs or the retained jobs? And then I'd really be interested in going back to the ratio analysis and determining kind of the cost per job, if you will.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we can definitely do that. If you also just want to be aware of something, at the beginning of every section of each part of the programs, up in the top right corner, like if you turn to page 47, which is Small Business Services and Finance, up in the top corner, it lists the performance measures for each one of those programs, but we can also break it out for you more explicitly.
I'd like to see it in a chart form, so that way we as a committee can can look at, who retained or what program retained the 4,690 jobs. What programs created the 10,285 jobs. Next question I have is on the certified project-ready industrial sites. Can you share with the committee the timeline in taking a site and certifying it?
Mr. Chair, yes, it varies. I mean, it depends on what issues the site needs addressed. Does it need a brownfields mitigation plan? Does it need infrastructure? So it's going to really depend. But the goal is to get the site to the point where if a company comes in and is interested in that property, they would be able to construct within 6 months. Okay. So that's the test we use, is a six-month build period.
I asked this question earlier, and I think I'll ask it again. Can you tell me offhand how many ports have been certified?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. To try to figure that out, I'm going to flip back to the section in the appendix on industrial lands.
There, committee, there's a reason I'm going with this question, and I'll follow
I can
up.
Tell you one in the Dalles that comes to mind real quick.
Sure.
Because there was a proposed announcement or a proposed company coming into the Dalles, which is a certified site that is going to perhaps be spending considerable amount of money on that certified site.
Mr. Chair, if you go to the industrial lands list and site map in your appendix, you will see a map of our currently certified sites. And in looking at the map, we do have a property in the Dalles, one in St. Helens, and two in Coos Bay. We can get you more information on that and on those sites specifically, but that map gives you those properties.
Now, I'll probably get in trouble at home, but I'm going to ask this question very bluntly. Why is the Port of Morrow not listed?
Mr. Chair, I'll need to get back to you in terms of what's happened with that site. I'm not the one working as lead on this project, so I will need to get back to you. I apologize.
I'd like to ask one more question, and again, it's going to be very blunt. How come there's only one on the entire coast?
Mr. Chair, I was asking that question myself yesterday looking at this map. And the answer is we haven't been able either, a combination of things, either there just aren't good enough sites that are really ready to go, or we don't have landowners right now interested in pursuing those options. Because we do wait until we've got a community and a landowner that wants to work with the state to get a site certified. So it's going to need to have their interest before we start with it. But again, I can get back to you with more information on the coast specifically.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I can shed a little light on that, because I was on the coast when they proposed some of the sites came out. The water table is sometimes a challenge on the coast, among other things. We are talking about large industrial sites, 25 acres plus, and so that sometimes is a bit of a challenge also. Also, the topography itself is sometimes of a challenge too. And then you have to have willing sellers. And so there were a number of challenges, I think, on the coast that came up during this time. And again, if you're filtering that out as saying what is your optimum properties, that's where it came out.
Another question. Share with us, I guess explain to me how I'm going to go tell Representative Butler that throughout his entire quarter of the state, we have zero certified industrial sites.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Burns,
Mr. Chair, if Senator Butler would have property owners that would like to work with us and would have good sites that we could work with, we would be more than happy to help with that. To be honest with you, one of the reasons that the industrial land certified sites are in the pattern they are is that it's really properties along transportation corridors that are going to be the most attractive to companies. So being very candid, those are a lot of the properties we're going to start with, because they're going to be the most viable if they're ready to go. And as
What do I tell folks back at home, that it's not attractive, therefore we can't get a certified site here?
Mr. Chair, I hope you don't say that to them, actually. I hope instead that what you can do is work with your community and work with us to figure out what would be the most attractive type of business or industry to come to your community, and do they need a large industrial site? What is it that they would need to attract them?
So how come the Port of Morrow doesn't have one?
Again, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to get back to you with specific information, but it's a very good question.
Senator Johnson, then we'll go to Senator Carter.
just your answer again confused me when you said if Representative Butler had landowners that were willing to work with us. That seems to suggest just sort of a cattle call. Anybody with a piece of property, come on down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out then why we should be investing public money in that kind of a process when the director has explained a process with a pretty thin sieve on it. And I guess the other thing that I would very much like is the committee that did that industrial siting process. Could you please tell us who those people are and where they are from?
Mm-hmm. We can get that. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'd like to answer that in that there are really two ways that those industrial sites come to us, all right? House Bill 2011 that was passed last session is the one that required an identification of what are called opportunity sites, or the most prime sites, if they were ready to go. So we've got opportunity sites, which are the ones colored red on your chart, but then we have other sites that we consider standard sites, which are sites where we've really got either a community or a landowner that really wants to be certified for a certain type of industry. And it is true, we will sit down with them, and if we think that it's completely unrealistic for them to attract the type of industry they're interested in, we'll tell them that. But if we can help them get certified for a company that might be viable, they can get added to this list even if they're not an opportunity site. Is that clear? Does that make more sense?
It is, and at the risk of irritating the chair, I'm going to set this off until a later time. But I still am very curious how the certification process worked. I know one of the sites well, and I know that there was a certain failure of the locals to cooperate and additional state money spent to get the site certified. So where's that interplay between the local folks and what they're expected to do and how much money they're supposed to put up? When it's a privately held site, I still don't understand. We'll come in and fix all your wetland problems. And I go back again to Senator Morris's comment. Wetland problems aren't unique to the sites that you've picked. And where's the equity in saying we're going to take this piece of property and fix the wetland problems and not take somebody else's piece of property and not fix theirs? When does the agency recommend that we take a systemic look at how we treat wetlands to the degree the state has any ability to control that and say this is what needs to be fixed, not these one-off sites?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, you've raised a few very interesting issues. Let me start with the last one first. Dealing with the wetlands issues, yes, that's one that's been a problem for a lot of the sites, particularly in the western part of the state. To be honest with you, our department really would support having just one wetlands program and permitting process, probably at the state level, rather than having two with the Corps and with DSL. So that's one issue that we do see a lot of, and because it's been a problem for businesses, we've really advocated for a change to that. And I personally have testified a number of times in session saying if we can get to one process, that'll be easier for the landowner. Your second question about how do we choose those priority sites and how much money do we put into them. We're just starting this program. So to be honest, we're still building it. And we're still trying to figure out what's the role of the local community, what's the role of the landowner, and what's the role of the state. And how do we all work together? We are not looking to completely pay for everything at the state level. That's not been the goal. Our goal is to provide enough leverage and an incentive to really help the property owner and the community get that site ready to go. So we're providing really relatively small sums of money to do wetlands work or brownfields analysis, and we're providing some technical assistance, but we're also expecting the cooperation and the work from the local community and the landowner. But in terms of exactly what that balance is, frankly, it'd be interesting to hear what you all have to say about that, because we're still developing the program, and it would be nice to get some feedback on what you think.
Well, I guess I would bunt that back to you. You guys are the professionals. You're in this business. It would be great to have you help guide the policymakers.
Well,
there have to be some patterns that are beginning to emerge as you're trying to work with these sites. And it would be useful, instead of having the agency always reactive, to have the agency proactive and to help give us guidance in what you've learned over the time you've been doing some of this stuff about what we could do better.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, thank you for those comments, and you're exactly right. There is a pattern, and there are, you know, a number of criteria that businesses look for, site selectors and all that. We have those in individual books with every piece of land, and so we go through that checklist, and so we know exactly what we're looking for as we go through this. put the second component is how commercially viable is going to be. And again, we want to make investments in commercially viable lands rather than ones that perhaps aren't. And again, I think we have a series that we go through there to get the private sector involved in that. In terms of the chairman's question regarding why isn't some land in eastern Oregon and all, not all the land has to be certified. You know, there are good pieces of land that are for sale that don't have to be certified that are ready to go. Some of the more difficult lands, quite frankly, are in the Willamette Valley because you have wetlands issues and other types of things. You oftentimes don't have those wetlands issues in other places. And so you don't necessarily, there's some places that don't need certified lands because they've got plenty of large-scale industrial lands around.
The dilemma is, and then let's move on, is you're right, we don't have wetlands, we have EFU land,
yeah, right,
exactly,
or federal forest,
exactly,
land, and therefore we can't expand. Yeah. But that's all right. Because we are on performance measures, I have a couple more questions. Can you share with us on the number of identified traded sector industry clusters with active business development plans? Help us, you're probably going to share with us in the future who those five are.
Right.
Okay. Any questions? Why don't we still have 20 minutes. Why don't we, do you want to proceed forward and head to the agency overview organizational structure?
Sure.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we can do that. Please turn to page 14 in your book. What we have tried to do here is to very briefly outline the different functions of the department. And again, we're doing a couple of things, just to remind you. Job creation is number one. Accountability is number two. Being able to measure the results and really demonstrate our success and be able to tell the story is something we're really trying to do better, because this can be a confusing agency. Trust me, it's sometimes confusing from the inside. So trying to explain that and make it clear to people so they can understand is kind of key. To do that, the way we've organized programs is in two general ways. Again, we've got the functions and the teams that are working to assist businesses directly, and then we have those that are working to help the communities get ready for economic development. And those are the two key things that we're trying to do. And what you'll see is the Business and Industry Division is the primary division, probably not surprisingly, given the title, responsible for working directly with businesses. And what they're doing to do that is two things. They're providing technical assistance. Our 12 business development officers make hundreds of visits collectively around the state each year to businesses to work with them, to ask questions, to say, what is it that you need in order to better be able to function in Oregon? And then bring that information back so that we can try to work with that collectively inside the department. The second key thing that we're doing with that division is giving money to business for different opportunities. But we give money in a lot of different ways. Specifically, we've got our domestic business development group responsible for the Strategic Reserve Fund and the Industry Sector Outreach Fund. We've talked about the Strategic Reserve in some detail today. We can go into the other funds in more detail as you'd like. The second key thing we're doing with business, though, is assisting smaller businesses. That is a key part of what the department is trying to do. And we do that by providing money to small business development centers, the SBDCs. There are 19 of them around the state. And some of our funds go directly to SBDCs to help them function. We also provide funding to other business groups that provide assistance to small business. And so what we're trying to do is get a better sort of bang for the buck and be a wholesaler and give money to a few of those groups so that they can provide assistance to small business around the state.
Can you share with us tomorrow, not today but tomorrow, can you share with us the proportion of your budget that goes to SBDCs and then also show the proportion of jobs that SBDCs create or retain?
Yes, we can do both.
Thank you.
And the third thing we do with small business is our business finance program. We provide loans and funding, and specifically through four different programs. We do get a question frequently, which is, well, aren't you competing with banks? Is this something really the state needs to be doing? Fair question. Actually, no, we're not competing with the banks. We are filling a different role. What we're doing is making it easier for banks to loan money to risky businesses. So we're generally providing a guarantee that makes the banks more comfortable in providing those funds. Also, we do have one fund where the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund, which we provide money directly to small startup companies that, frankly, are usually too risky for the banks to want to touch. So we have a higher loan loss there because these are risky projects. But again, the decision was made by the legislature a few sessions ago that that maybe is a role for the state, is really try to help incent or provide some assistance for those startups so that we can see more of that type of business generated around the state.
On your loan programs, can you provide the committee with a timeline of receipt of application to disbursement of funds?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can do that. It varies by program, but
sure.
Would you like the sort of the average of the,
on
the program?
On the four primary loan program.
On the four primary, yes, we can do that. I'm looking at time at this point, Mr. Chair, and wondering how much detail you would like at this point, either on the business programs, because I can tell by looking at you that you've all had a full day, or would you like to try to move into some of the infrastructure? What would be your preference?
You know, what I would like to do is I think if we could go to page 20 and just have you take 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and just kind of go through the flow chart, and then we'll wrap it up for the day. And then tomorrow we can put more detail into it and begin to get into each of the groups.
Okay. Mr. Chair, in looking at the flow chart on page 20, this is the general overline or overview and outline of the department structure. Why don't I start at the bottom and work up? We have four primary divisions inside the agency. The first, which is on the far left, is business and industry development. That's really what we've been talking about primarily today. All of those functions are housed within that one division. The next two divisions, community development and capital projects, work primarily with local governments and with communities. Community development is doing the outreach to communities, to sit down with them and talk with them, help them get through the certified lands process, and help process some of the contracts, particularly for the regional rural funds that go to local communities. The third box, capital projects.
You have a question?
Yeah.
We have a question here. Representative Avakian.
I didn't know that you had whatever tribal relationships means, interactions with the tribes. Could you describe that a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, we do have certain programs that could be funded, that could fund tribal activities. So some of our programs are eligible to the tribes, and so that's why they're on that list.
With the same type of criteria that you use with other projects, or a different set of criteria?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, I will need to get back to you because I think it may differ between the programs, and I'd like to make sure that I am precise in getting you that information.
Can I help you with that question?
I'm
struggling. Wouldn't every one of these programs be available to a tribal business?
Mr. Chair, I'm sitting there going through the 22 programs in my head rapidly, thinking that, and probably yes.
Okay.
Again, I need to get back to you, but I think you're probably right.
Okay.
Questions?
Yes, Senator Carter.
Marty, good to see you.
Thank you.
I'm having some concerns because when I look down at the places where you use strategic reserve funds, do you have other funding sources in your cash that you could use? And in particular, I'm thinking about places like Hermiston and Umatilla and those places where you have large groups of Hispanic residents and where the economic development opportunities are less than low, and where I don't see us engaged and working with them in those communities. How can you so engage this department so that in places like Umatilla and other places where there's a growing Hispanic community, to help them with not only technical assistance, but looking at the state in terms of how we can grow small businesses in those communities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, thank you. It's good to see you, too. Places, there's a couple of questions. Usually our strategic reserve fund is forgivable loans that are with companies that are ready to locate immediately, and that usually happens in conjunction with some of our other loan funds. From the educational point of view, we'd probably use some of those other funds rather than strategic reserve fund for that particular purpose. we do consider, and I think it's broken out, distressed areas with particular concern. And so when things happen, we really do try to take into consideration, this one, let's really stretch for this. In other cases, it really kind of happens naturally. And I think that, I forget the ratio, but it's somewhere around one-third of all the money right now is going into some rural areas that have, in some cases, substantial minorities. Pendleton, I don't think it's quite done yet, but the Tillamook will be using, I believe, some strategic reserve funds, and that will involve some small businesses and lots of, different organizations and companies that will benefit from the expansion of Tillamook in the Pendleton area. But the strategic reserve fund is really kind of oriented toward big companies ready to go right now. We usually use other funds, particularly for training and other purposes like that.
Okay, I knew I had conversation with the governor before he got real sick, and I said I took, for instance, Representative Smith, because he's being real modest, and you can't fight as hard for your own as somebody else can. So I'm joining him in his fight. We were talking to the minority business people and talking to them about how we have procurement opportunities in the state. We have other contracts, flagging, and with Department of Transportation, which I've talked to them about. It would just appear to me that small businesses, as they come online and as they grow, they tend to hire their own people from local communities. Mm-hmm. I would like to see you guys reach out a little more, and these kind of depressed communities would have you working across agency lines here with minority development centers, with the agencies and with economic development, taking in maybe a SWAT team to look at and make an assessment of what's going on there, so that these communities can realize some of the economic opportunity that we have in the state. And so I'd like to see you maybe you could get back to us with some kind of plan before the end of the session, helping us to feel that the Office of Economic Development is community development, whatever you guys call it now, are doing well. Now, I do know, and I don't know whether you've gotten rid of it now, because I spent my life as co-chair of Trade and Economic Development Committee with this agency talking about baby loans. If you have baby loans, just as much as the high-risk loans are there, it's something that we could be able to do something so that during the interim you're working and helping them and seeing what we can do along those lines. That would be, I'd be excited to know that you're doing some of that too.
Okay. Thank you. We will do that.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, would you like to just finish the very end of the org chart?
Yeah, just very quickly. I think we had a large amount of information today.
Yes, we have a large amount of questions, too, yes. All right, back to the org chart on page 20. The very last box at the bottom right is actually my group, which is Central Operations Division. Kind of do what the name implies. We handle a lot of the budget accounting, contracting, et cetera, the internal operations of the department. So, but again, we've organized those four key groups at the bottom to really deal with business and to deal with communities and then to deal with sort of the internal infrastructure that it takes to run the department. Moving up, we've got the deputy director and then the director's office, and you will see off to the side our international division has its own commission, and the director works directly with that group, and then the Oregon Arts Commission and Cultural Trust is also associated with our budget. So that explains just very briefly the overview of the agency.
Terrific. Well, we've had a lot of information today, committee. I would encourage the committee to read ahead a little bit and go through and look at the agency overview history, page 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. And take a look at some of the issues the legislature has placed on the agency, and then also look at some of the funding issues that have arised specifically or in specific recently. Because I think what you're going to see is that you have an agency that's had this body throw a lot on them, and yet at the same time take a large amount of funding away in terms of trying to help them with their staffing. Tomorrow we're going to begin, let's see here, it looks like with Mr. Fox with the domestic business development. And from there we'll go to the innovation economy and, if time allows, to the small business and finance. One other comment I have, and Senator Carter reminded me of this, and I appreciate that. In your breakdown of jobs, both created and retained, can you share with us how those breakdowns in terms of opportunities maintained and created for minorities, for females, and for folks who are perhaps small business?
Mr. Chair, the information that we get from those funds is done through a survey that's done every year, and I believe that information is in there, but I will go back to the survey and we will get that to you.
Being very candid, I really hope you have gender and racial issues tracked.
Mr. Chair, right now, so do I.
We're going to have a real discussion.
We've had surveys in the past, Mr. Chair, and they didn't do a damn thing. I have to tell you, then excuse my language.
Yes.
Surveys don't get the job done, I have to tell you.
Representative Abakian.
You know, along the lines of some of the questions that we've asked of you today and what you and Senator Carter have talked about is that, I don't even know how this fits within your mission, but we're not just talking about minority or women-owned businesses, but economically depressed areas either, and services that are being provided or not being provided based on the classification of wealth, which then gets into many of the geographical areas of the state that you were asking questions about, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, you know, at some point it might be helpful to have a discussion about what you think your mission is with regard to economic development, and any tracking that you do with regard to those economically depressed areas. And I know you did talk about some of that today, but it seems to be a theme.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Senator Carter.
Marty, let me just explain. I did enterprise zone legislation in 1985. Uh-huh. We have used it and used it and used it. The department didn't come back and actually tell us that they really knew how many jobs that we've had, because what happened is when Multnomah County sends out the information to the different companies, they just mark a check or something of that nature. They couldn't actually tell us how many jobs mm-hmm. that we had in Northeast Portland as a result of the dollars that we worked through partnership with Portland Development Commission with. That just won't get the job done. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the line, Marty, I know how you work, and I trust you a lot and know how you've worked in those communities. And I wish that you can get us some data that really can say how many people are at work, and if not, what can we do about it. And back to Senator Johnson's position, you guys are the experts. You need to give us the information. We just ask the questions, and you help us to shape policy regarding those kind of issues.
Thank you. Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still am troubled by what you have to react to. You are at the other end of the phone for local government, county government, advice. All of this comes your way, and they look at you as a resource, and they want you to be all things to all people. I want to go back to that, because I think the task is almost impossible. And then you have this regional structure, and I'm not trying to micromanage. I'm just telling you what I see in my work. Then you have this regional structure where you have one individual, for instance, Coos Curry Douglas. Mm-hmm. Now, how can one individual respond to Coos Curry Douglas? It's impossible. I had made some suggestions. Maybe the person should just stay in Coos for 3 months, move to Douglas for 3 months, then move to Curry for 3 months. But I worry that in all of this being lost, that the department itself doesn't come up with, this is a list of the way that this is structured, and we see because we do the work every day, we see this doesn't work. You're just a point of criticism, but it's not your fault. And so I think somehow, I'm with Margaret. I truly trust you Marty. And I think you have the expertise in the business world to understand the way it ought to be done. And maybe the department really needs, I want to go back to that, you need to think about what you do the best, what you're capable of really doing and moving ahead, and what you need not to be able to do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question for tomorrow then? It sounds as if you want us to continue to go through the structure, but you've also asked a lot of questions you'd like responses to. How would you like us to
that? In writing.
Okay.
And then what we'll do is probably towards the end, again, we'll take a little bit of time and allow folks to ask those. I'm concerned if we put it on the front end, we'll never get to page 23. So, Representative Richardson.
Chair, as you gather the information that's been requested on SBDCs, would you add to it a breakdown of expenditures so that we see how much goes toward overhead and how much actually goes out the door to actually accomplish the mission?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I will see if we have that.
Well, I bet you do.
I bet we might. So I'll see what I can do. Okay.
Well, colleagues, we're all in this together. And we'll get through this. I think this has been very good, very educational. And we'll come together again tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Good.
So with that, we're adjourned.
You know, Greg,